Get real advice from renowned experts and entrepreneurs on today's business leaders. Here's your host, Gabe Arnold.
All right. On today's show, I have Will Hurst. He is the founder of Big Little Gyms, and we have been connected for quite a while, and I'm going to tell a story that Will probably doesn't remember in a little bit, but welcome to the show, Will.
Thank you. Thanks, Gabe. Excited to be here.
So I think I'm going to change my format a little bit and then go to what I normally go to. But the reason I wanted to have you on the show, Will, is that I remember a few years ago, I'd have to look at the actual date where you hired me and my team to do Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. And we just completely fucking dropped the ball on you and did a piss poor job. And the reason was, is because we landed like 35 customers in one night. Which is a great problem to have, but we ended up just really screwing things up for you. And I remember when you reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we're going to cancel the service. It's just not working. And you said, you know, I know you're a super stand-up guy, Gabe, and I know this is just, you know, a growth phase you're going through. And I remember how you showed up in that moment, and it was something I'll never forget. It gave me a ton of consolation and confidence in the middle of a tough growth phase for us. And it just really spoke to who you are as a business owner, as a man, and just who you're, you know, what your character is and who you are. And I just, that I will never forget. And I've followed you ever since. And you're somebody that I really admire and respect as an entrepreneur. So I really appreciate you having you here.
Awesome. Yeah, of course, Gabe. Yeah, no problem, man. No need to apologize. I mean, I've gone through similar issues. I think we all do when we get a bottleneck. It's all good. I understood at the time and I understand now because I've been through it myself. I've definitely had to, you know, have hard conversations with clients, more of them having hard conversations with me about them getting underserved. It's only ever a problem if you don't learn from them, right?
Yeah.
So, and which you obviously have, and we stay buddies and have, you know, I've been watching what you've been doing too. And like I just mentioned before we jumped on, you know, I even thought of you just a couple of weeks ago about jumping on and just doing a, seeing if you were available for a quick like FaceTime consulting session, just because I needed a second perspective on something. I was struggling for a couple of days, actually struggling for a couple of weeks, literally dealing with one of those being inundated phases that we were just talking about. Yeah. Luckily, I got through it, so I didn't finish typing that message, but you were one of the first guys I was going to go to. Luckily, I was able to figure it out without having to borrow anybody else's ear, but if I get there again by... You know, I definitely would definitely be top of mind. I'd reach out to you for sure to get some clarity because, you know, you've obviously been there and so have I. So it's all good.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
So when did you first realize you're an entrepreneur?
When did I first realize, man, I knew back when I was growing up, man. I grew up like, you know, everybody's story is always, you know, rags to riches. You know, I like to believe mine really is, you know, because it's obviously, your perspective is your perspective, but yeah, I didn't grow up with very much. Realized pretty quickly that like, I wasn't going to be going to college. You know what I mean? Just didn't have it in the cards. Didn't even really have anybody to educate me on how that system worked and how I could even get like a scholarship. Like looking back now, knowing what I know, now and like, you know, watching several friends do it, I was like, oh, I could have done that and probably gone to college or whatever, but I just assumed it wasn't going to happen. So, I wasn't a great student, wasn't a, you know, like, there's a lot of things that were indicators that like the system isn't for me. Mm-hmm. And just kind of a somewhat rebellious streak also in my personality. And like, you know, if everybody goes one way, I go the other. So entrepreneurship, and at the time, entrepreneurship wasn't a cool thing to do. You know what I mean? Like entrepreneurship was a weird word. And I mean, now entrepreneurship's like super cool thing to do, right? Like everybody wants to be an entrepreneur because like, you know, by realizing that like the system isn't necessarily all it's cracked up to be. Back then it was still like, if you didn't go to college, you were a loser, you know? So, but yeah, it worked for me and I was, you know, dealing baseball cards. Dude, I used to dumpster dive for baseball cards to get more. I would go to like the local card, you know, comic book and card shop and like dig through their dumpster to get more cards out of the collection. Cause you never knew whose card was going to be worth X amount of money in 10 years, you know? So like I was already thinking long-term and already thinking how I can make a buck out of nothing, you know? So there was a lot of those things. And then I got, you know, through high school, you know, I was kind of around a rough crowd and all that stuff. It was like, hey, you know, I just want to graduate from high school and get out on my own. That was like literally all that was in my mind. Get through high school without getting any addicted to any drugs, any bad influences. any of these things that were going on in the crowd that I was kind of in, because we were from the other side of the tracks, essentially, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I just get through that. And then once I was there, I was like, oh, man, the world's my playground. I can do what I want. I moved west, got a great sales job, selling cars for a very reputable family-owned dealership. And they taught me the ropes, you know what I mean? They taught me the ropes. Given I already had the skill set, I could talk to people. And I also grew up outside Detroit where I knew cars really well. So like I understood, yeah, you know, how to build value when people came in. I could, you know, we didn't sell the best line of cars. We sold Pontiacs and GMCs and Buicks. And at the time, like, they weren't producing the best cars on the planet, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I fully sold out on the brand. And when people come in, I made sure they left with one of those three brands of cars. And kept, they're looking at a Toyota or whatever. You know, so you just learn how to build value and things like that. But anyways, yeah, those skill sets, they carried on with me. And then I started side hustles, you know, in that same period of time with, I was doing Amazon FBA before it was cool too. Like I was doing Amazon, I think before Amazon went public in like 2008, 2009. Wow. I remember I bought, I'm such a rascal now I think back about it, but I got on a site called DHgate, which still exists, where you can buy like bootleg jerseys of like athletes. And I got blacklisted on Amazon back in like 2010 for selling those. eBay won't let me sell either because they warned me and they're like, hey, do you have a license to sell this stuff? And I'm like, no, man, that's legit. And like, keep in mind, guys, like, you know, I'm 37 now, I'm an adult. I was like 22, 23 at the time. So like being a young 20 something, trying to find a way, you know? So yeah, anyways, I did all these little things that were cool before they were cool. I was running Google AdWords. I've started a local landscape company here in Phoenix. It was my first like real entrepreneurial business that kind of blew up. It was just mom and pop. I started in the garage. Like we used to install artificial grass here in Phoenix. So because the real grass doesn't really grow that well. So everybody plants this artificial grass. We kind of caught wind of the new line of products that were coming out. And we're one of the first companies here during the recession, 2000, 2008, of when they kind of started making the products really, really nice and look like real grass. So I legit was having like these 1,000-pound rolls of turf shipped to like my garage in my home and loading those into like, you know, my trailer and truck by hand. You know, really, truly, you know, blue collar type work. Yeah. I grew that business to $5 million a year, by the way, because I learned how to run Google Ads before anybody else learned how to run Google Ads. You know, I remember going to a local trade show here, a home and garden show, and I got like the smallest little plot there that I could afford, $500. Meanwhile, next to me was like the guys that were the category kings locally had like, you know, 10,000 square foot space and pretty much had built like a full, like, you can imagine like $1 million home landscape at this home and garden show. I just had like a little square of turf, like come check out my turf, you know? But I remember them walking by me, and this is when I first started. I remember them walking by me and like shaking their head and pointing at me and saying like, you know, that those Google ad things are never going to work. You know what I mean? Like, cause they saw my ads, you know, those things are never going to work. Like who is laughing now? They went out of business 2 years later because of the recession. They were over bloated, over leveraged, over debted company. I was a lean, mean young guy who knew how to run ads when they were 50 cents a lead. And we were selling jobs, you know, minimum 5K, 6K, 10K profits on these jobs, you know? So that, you know, long story short, I guess, or short story long, I don't know, whichever it was, but that's kind of how it all like started to become evident to me that like, this is the route I need to go. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I didn't realize that you were kind of in the services or contracting into things too, because that's where I got my education, got kicked in the teeth a little bit and learned how all this stuff works. So
yeah, 100%. Oh, yeah. And I learned too, man, like that business, that $5 million business, I made all the mistakes with it. Like I was good at the marketing and sales side, but that's exactly all I was good at. You know what I mean? Like we did do good installation. I tried to jump through all the hoops. Again, I was in my mid 20s thinking I was invincible. And I tell people now, like I had to sabotage a $5 million a year business in order to learn what I know now. Yeah. You know, so when that thing pretty much crashed, it never like, it's not like I went broke. I did all the things that entrepreneurs do, which is like, you try to keep wearing too many hats for too long where you can't undo it. So, you know, obviously I don't make those mistakes anymore, but.
And yeah, it's interesting because when I built my construction company, I did the same thing. Like the marketing and sales, I nailed down because like paid traffic was cheap. I was getting 20, 30 leads a day. Selling is no big deal. Yeah. But I didn't think about like true profitability, building the team the right way, you know, all the infrastructure in the back end is what you don't think about. You're like, oh, just pour money, more money in the top, everything will work. It's not quite how it goes.
So that's exactly what I did. That's exactly. And it was funny. It was the last year when we knew we were pretty much going to be done with it, where I finally just said, screw it. I raised, you know, I was also like underpricing the market. Like, again, same thing. I thought like $2 profit was $2 profit. You know what I mean? Like, when in reality, there was a lot of costs coming out of that and we weren't making as much money as we thought. So in the last year, I just jacked the prices like way up. And I was like, I just kind of fed up with it. It was funny as that was like our most profitable year was like our last year, but it was really kind of some of the administrative mistakes that we made. So like I said, the hiring mistake really got us, like, you know, we put people trying to dance around paying payroll taxes, you know, you're contracting people, which I'm sure you know what that's like.
Yep.
You know, people tell you not to do that, but you're like, I'm going to do it because I don't want to pay the extra 5% payroll taxes, which, you know, we ended up getting like, you know, someone reported us because they're pissed off because people that work in that trade, for everybody, we fire them for real reasons. They'll still go like report you. And then someone will show up at your door and be like, let's look at all your records, you know? And then we didn't have any records. We didn't keep track of stuff. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the only thing I knew of how much I was selling. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
So they're like, oh, here's your fine, $100,000. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, oh Lord, like, you can't get away from that unless you want a judgment against you. So we had to pay that. So, and we had more of that stuff breathing down our necks. So, you know, like, is this something, a lesson learned? You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. It was only a couple of years ago that I finished paying off the IRS for not paying people's payroll taxes because I hired them as employees, but I didn't do anything right after that. So,
yep. Yep. That's exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody goes through that hard lesson learned. Actually, I hope everybody goes through that lesson learned and makes it out the other side. At least some people don't. Some people keep making the same mistakes.
And it's amazing to me, like, when I talk to young entrepreneurs, I'm like, pay your taxes, get your insurance, get a good attorney, and get a good CPA. And then, you know, the wise ones will do that, and the ignorant ones that go out of business are the, like you and I were when we were younger, they ignore all that good advice. And it's like, man, I wish you could just experience what I went through to understand what I'm trying to tell you. So,
right.
Yeah. It's very painful.
100%. And like, you know, obviously with what we both do now with, you know, helping guide on their entrepreneurs, you know, I do it with gym owners primarily. That's because I made all the mistakes as a gym owner too, same way. And yeah. you try to tell them, you try to change their way of thinking to be more like a CEO of like thinking big picture.
Right. Because
all the quick fixes and all that stuff, yeah, it works, but like you don't have to, it's almost like people think it either has to be quick fix mindset when they enter into this world of like trying to fix their business, or it's long term. It's like, no, it's both, man. Like you do the things that are working of the moment. You know, you do your Facebook ads and your funnels and your offers and all that stuff, but then you also do the things that you're supposed to do on the, you know, do right by the business, work on the business, you know, implement all the things you mentioned, you know, good tax strategy, good corporate strategy, good organizational strategy, you know, all that stuff, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a long journey to get to where we are sometimes.
It is. Yeah.
It's amazing.
You can tell people, but they'll, you know, sometimes they just need to keep running into the wall themselves, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And the other thing that the longer I'm an entrepreneur, because this is 22 years for me now, first half, I totally didn't know anything. Second half, I think I'm getting closer to the mark. But
sure.
The thing that I've learned, like, is the longer that you stay in this game, you start to really see who's paying attention, who's doing good work, and who matters, because there's always these blips of quote unquote entrepreneurs, business owners, whatever, that try to jump on a trend. And it's really the people that just stick with it in the long run and continually improve, like you've done. And like, it's just been fun to watch your journey, because I can just tell every year, I can tell that you are significantly farther than you were, you know, a year ago.
Yeah.
And so as you look at, you know, as you look at what you're doing now, you know, with Big Little Gyms, tell us the story of how, you know, you started kind of similar to me, like I said, services, contracting, kind of, and that end of thing, selling cars, like you said, blue collar, which is an amazing education. I think in some senses, I think every business owner should go through that before they try to open a business.
Yeah.
But as you started there, what was the transition then to starting this company? And, you know, talk to me about kind of how you got there and who you helped.
Sure. Yeah. So if we rewind back to when I had that $5 million a year landscape company that was running, we had pretty much like, we were buying so much product from the people who made that artificial grass product in the factories in Georgia at a time when they weren't getting a lot of business, that they kind of made us like a lead wholesaler. Like we could actually buy the product so cheap, we could resell it And I'll tell you why this is important to the story, because, you know, we needed warehouses now in multiple states, because now we weren't just serving Arizona as an installer. We were now selling product online. So I also built an e-commerce store selling artificial grass online, which is a hard product to sell because you're selling by the linear foot, which is hard. You know, like they probably still haven't figured out how to do that properly on e-commerce platforms. So I remember having to like try to figure out how to sell a roll of something by linear foot, but charge them per square. Yeah. Anyways, so we were selling it. We were doing good, and then we wanted to start importing a competing product from China. So we started doing that and bringing in product from China, and then we needed a warehouse by the coasts. And you know, I had always wanted to live on the coast in California, so we moved over there and we opened up that warehouse, and we had like a 15,000 square foot warehouse, you know, about 5 miles off the coast in Huntington or Orange County. And but in that warehouse, I had extra space. And at the time, I had taken up CrossFit, so as a way to just take care of my health, I walked into a nearby CrossFit gym in Orange County in Newport Beach, and just loved it. It was like the kind of fitness I always wanted to do. So you know, I did it for like a year and a half at this gym, and then because we had extra warehouse space in the building that I was renting for my other business, I was like, I had a buddy that I had. So it's kind of weird how it came together. So because I was bringing product in from China, this artificial grass product, it came in like 15-foot long rolls. A container ship from China is 40 feet long. So if I have a 15-foot roll next to a 15-foot roll, that equals 30, right? Yeah. So that leaves 10 feet of space in the end of the container, right? I could put whatever I want in that container because I'm already paying the $3,000 to bring the container over. So what did I do? I said, you know, I like this CrossFit thing. I could see the equipment end of it being a good e-commerce business. I'm going to fill the end of my containers with equipment, and I can buy, you know, like barbells and dumbbells and stuff from China for like $50, 50 cents on the dollar compared to what they're selling it for here in the States, and make a profit. So I did that, and I brought over a couple container ends full, 10 foot sections full of equipment, had it sitting in the corner of this warehouse. Also had extra warehouse space. I had a buddy from Michigan that was a CrossFit coach that said, hey, I want to move west. So what do I have? I have space, equipment, and I have a guy who can run it. Yeah. Let's start a CrossFit gym. You know what I mean? He moved west. We started this CrossFit gym. It was called Bear Flag CrossFit. The California flag has the bear on it, so it's Bear Flag. And we did that for since from 2011, 2012 through to 2014. Grew a pretty good business at a time when it was pretty easy. Like running a gym, opening a gym back then with CrossFit, it was just hitting mainstream. And you're still like early adopter phase where there were like guys like me all over the place that just loved cool niche kinds of fitness. They didn't want to do the classic, you know, bodybuilding thing in front of the mirror.
Right.
Those were the easy days. Those were the glory days, I call them. And we grew a 200 member gym, and we made enough money for both me and my partner, for me as a side hustle, to make an extra few $1,000. He was able to pay himself an extra few $1,000 and live in California. But then that landscape company, like I said, kind of crashed and burned. So I didn't really want to do that anymore. I wanted to move back to Arizona. So I said, hey, Eric, you know, if you want to buy me out of this gym, you can buy me out of this gym. I'm not going to ask you to pay me for the list we built or the client revenue value, which is normally how you'd evaluate a gym. I just said, I just want you to pay me back for the half of the equipment that I bought, which he did. So he took what he had in his bank account, bought me out. He was able to stay there for a few more years. I took that money, moved back to Arizona, started Spark CrossFit in 2014. And this was an important lesson learned. So 2014 was about when these gyms, at least in a market like Phoenix, which is like a B-tier city where it's relatively competitive with things like fitness, you know, there was gyms on every corner. I was no longer I no longer had first mover advantage, you know? And I wasn't ready for that. I didn't know that. I thought I was going to open this gym and things were going to kind of go how they went for the first gym, open the doors and they will come. That didn't happen, right? Like it happened a little bit because we did do some like, you know, organic marketing and we kind of got the word out, you know, but we didn't do any like direct response ads or like brand awareness campaigns. We didn't use any of these tools I had learned how to use my previous business with this gym. And I went on for a couple of years fighting that, like tinkering with things. Like I thought like, I'm going to mess with the website some more. Maybe that'll do it. You know what I mean? Like apply, you know, what we had learned from running like 20 a month in Google AdWords back in 2008, 2009 to like this gym, you know? And we kind of, luckily I had some cash and some investments and diversifications I'd had. I was able to stay afloat with the gym. And then finally I got like burnt out around 2016, 2017. I was like, screw it, man. Like, I don't care. You know, part of this problem with these gym owners, or not problem with gym owners, but problem with running a gym is you get so latched in the community of what everybody thinks about you, you know, that like you're afraid to like go and market your business in a different way for fear of like how it's going to, what light it's going to paint you into your members.
Yeah.
Because it happens. Like you got this tight little community and they don't want anything to change. And you got 150 members and you're making a little bit of money, but not enough to like scratch that success itch that you have. And then, you know, like, man, I need another 100 members, but it's going to make this place busier, you know? And then you start doing that and the member, you start getting the peanut gallery of the people that used to like you. And now they don't like you anymore because they're like, who are all these new people? You know, you're greedy. Like, who are you to go make money? You know what I mean? You know? And some people struggle with that, man. Like me, luckily I got a thick skin. I didn't care. I was like, let's just, we started running ads. We started doing these things, started applying, you know, direct response strategies, brand awareness campaigns, started doing the things we know we should have been doing all along. And we grew that gym from like, you know, just barely getting by to like 400 members and like 60 and 70K months, you know, being able to pay ourselves a solid like 100K a year salary from this gym, and the gym have its own proceeds and capital to spend in the upgrades. We had a fully staffed gym. We hired like professional grade, like, you know, coaches that could enhance the member experience and help us with ascension and upsell. We built a business we're super proud of, you know what I mean, which is awesome, you know. So anyways, we got there, and then, you know, in that process, I documented a lot of it openly. I kind of did what like, you know, Steven Larson does, where he kind of openly documents his journey. I started publishing and like these Facebook groups that I'm in that were only gym owners and saying like, hey, here's what we're doing today. Before too long, I had other gym owners asking like, hey, how can you show me how you did what you did? You know what I mean? Or at least part of it, you know? So I tried once, I did a little thing called Metcon marketing before I really knew a lot about funnels. And it was more like redesigning websites and more like website web agency stuff for gyms, which I wish I would have stayed with, because we would have been early in that game. And there were some guys that stayed in it that they still build crap products that they just happened to be did stuff for gyms back then, at least in this little niche of gyms too. Like I'm not just in like fitness and just general gyms. I'm kind of in that CrossFit, functional fitness, you know, type of niche. So, and that niche almost kind of has like a barrier to entry. They don't trust everybody because they're kind of like the counterculture of fitness. You know what I mean? Like they're not like, yeah, they're not about like fancy Zumba and stuff like that. And, you know, they're like, you got to like work your way in, you know? But I was already in because I'd done it and they'd watched me do it. So I did the Metcon marketing thing, did a few websites, hated it. So I was like, oh, I don't want to do web. You know, the websites were like every gym owner I thought they knew better. I also just didn't know how to serve them right. I didn't realize they're like, hey, I'm the expert. What am I asking them for advice for? You know what I mean? Like, why should I be asking the guy whose website sucks that I'm replacing if he likes it or not? Of course he's not going to like it. He doesn't know what a good website looks like. You know what I mean? Like at the end, I should have just been like, hey, this is your website. We're going to run it. Pay me. But I didn't. I let him drag me out for like 2-3 months at a time. And I hated it. But then, you know, fast forward a couple of years after that, 2018, 2019, you know, we started to see like ClickFunnels and some of these tools and things like that coming out. We're like, oh, this is more what we need to be doing for these gym owners. Like we need to like, you know, instead of rebuilding their whole website, let's do that too. But like, let's also like show them like more direct response strategies, you know, simpler ways of launching campaigns, things like that. And that's when we launched BLG, you know, and it kind of started taking off. You know what I mean? And it's more of like a combination of mentorship, trainings, and tools and software, which is cool. Like we're actually getting into building some software for these gyms that can do a lot of the things that people are trying to put together all in one. Yeah. Is that kind of like cover how we got there and how we got here?
No, I love it. Cause I think, I just really like how what I heard in your story is like you repeatedly like tried something, learned, and then pivoted and grew out of it. And, you know, like all of us, we don't know what we don't know. And then we, you know, we have to learn some of it hands on. But it's really interesting your evolution of how you kind of got there. And something else you said that to me was encouraging anyway, is like how you started the gym and you just didn't apply all this other stuff that you already knew how to do and you did in another business.
Yep.
And I'm in an interesting spot right now in my business where it's like, we've done mass amounts of lead generation for people in other businesses. And now I'm finally, for whatever reason, actually going to do my own lead gen, like, and we're growing and fine, but like to take it to the next level, I'm like, I have to actually apply some of the stuff I know. And it's interesting to me that there's certain pieces of my entrepreneurial journey it sounds like maybe it's similar for you, where you have all this expertise and knowledge and you can apply it somewhere else, but you can't always plug it in on your own stuff. And there's, the most important work I've been doing this year is like the internal work of mindset and beliefs and like unstopping weird blocks that I have. Like, and that's just a really weird one, because we're really good at that. And like, I just have struggled to plug it into my own stuff. So I finally let go. I let go of a lot of it and let my team do it, which is obviously a huge piece of it, but also just like got over myself. And I think entrepreneurship is fun because not only are there incredible market challenges and opportunities, but I think it's probably one of the most intense personal development paths you could take, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you, as you're saying, like how you're struggling with doing it on yourself, like, you know, that I think that stems from, you could tell me what it feels like for you, but to me, it just feels like a little bit of insecurity for me when I run into that. Like, I'm actually in a very similar place. Like, we've pretty much grown BLG, like almost organically, like using organic outreach strategies, leveraging a lot of what like the social media platforms give you for free, and just knowing those things really, really well. A lot of content strategy. I do some remarketing, but I haven't really run a lot of like cold traffic ads. I just haven't had to. Yeah. Which is funny, because that's, like you said, that's what we help people do. Right. You know, and it's like, now I just got to apply these principles, and they're principles, right? Like, at the end of the day, these are principles. These are like unbending, they work. You know what I mean? Like, so why, if I tell everybody else to do it, like, you know, I guess in a way it kind of like almost makes you relate more to your clients, right? Like, of why they have struggled.
Right.
You know, because like there's reasons why they've held back, and, you know, sometimes why they're jumping on board with the people like us is so we can, you know, hopefully just move the needle for them a little bit, you know, get them over that hump. You know, that's, I'm right there with you. Actually, I got to say, before we jumped on, I think we only had a few seconds. I mentioned how I'm working on webinars for like a case study funnel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just got to get that thing going, man. Like, come on. You know,
I think you're totally right. And I think it definitely comes from insecurity sometimes. For me, I think in a weird way, and I'm getting over myself finally, but I think some of it probably comes from ego somehow, like, as I'm just thinking it through, like, that's a piece of it. And then the other part that I think is probably just as big a factor, and you can probably relate to this, is like, I'm such a direct sales guy that I just want to get on the phone with you and I'll close you, or I'll hold a live webinar and close a bunch of people. And it's like, I love sales so much that I have in the past believe that I just need to sell. And like, when you scale a business, you really do actually have to apply marketing. And it's like, I mean, I'm talking to myself and finally listening, but yeah. It's interesting. I think that we, in different areas, or I think for me anyway, in different areas of my business, I'm like, well, I can handle that. And like you were saying, wearing too many hats or thinking that you can over leverage yourself is a losing scenario. And I think that's one of the areas that, as I'm thinking it through now, just like even in this moment, like, I think I just thought I could take care of that too. And that's not how the business is going to grow beyond where we are to the next level.
So. 100%. Yeah. It's you have to like, yeah, it's crazy what happens. And I'm sure you've had it happens because you have a little bit of a team, right? Every time you hire someone, like, you find this new, like, white space you can finally venture into and go full on with like something you've been like trying to do, or maybe it just allows you to go full on with one hat instead of wearing 12. And right. You almost always ask yourself, like, why didn't I do that sooner? Why was that so hard? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, and maybe it is the entrepreneur's dilemma, or like, an entrepreneur's dilemma of like, you know, what got us here is, you know, sheer grit and will, and like being able to do multiple things at once and keep track of them and make all these balls float in the air at the same time. Yeah. But I think you get to a point where if that works early on, like, you scale all those things equally. And now it's like, I don't care what kind of human you are, you can't manage that. You know what I mean? Like, you got to start delegating, right? Like,
yeah. And like you said, what was useful early on will hurt you at the next stage. And that's so, it's almost like, it's so counterproductive to me if I compare it to other walks of life and other, you know, expertises. Cause like, in a lot of spaces, you just refine and refine and get better and better, and you keep doing more and more, right? Or you get better and better at the thing. Like entrepreneurship for me is not like copywriting. Like, over time, I get better as a copywriter. I learn new things. I love it. I can master and perfect it. But that's a, like, kind of a straight line path. And there's going to be some variance. But if we look back over the last 100 years of copywriting, it's not really that different from 1920 to 2020 in my book, repetition and improvement in practice. But yeah, when it comes to entrepreneurship, I think what makes us great as entrepreneurs is that we can reinvent ourselves very quickly, but then we get stuck in a certain cycle sometimes and we forget at each level, we have to reinvent in a totally different way. We don't have to reinvent how we did sales, but we have to reinvent how we do operations. Or like, I'm in a place right now where a good friend of mine, client, and somebody that also consults for me, pointed out to me, she's like, you have to engineer your communication channels now, Gabe. You can't just huddle up with, you know, 5 or 6 people like it was years ago. Like, we have 50 people on the team, and it's like, I have to actually engineer and thoughtfully think about communication. And I drop the ball on the team all the time because I'm like, oh, I told Will, don't you know? You know? So that's like an example of like what I did before just is irrelevant. It doesn't work at all.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You said the magic word, I think, of like cycles, right? Like everything, like nature runs in cycles. Again, another principle, right? Like if we look at, you can look to nature for so many things, like, because it's probably the most intuitive system there is. We still can't figure out how to even predict weather patterns. You know what I mean? That's how advanced it is. You know what I mean? Like, but everything runs in cycles, right? So it'd be silly to think that we as human beings and as entrepreneurs don't also work in cycles.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, you know, the, you know, there's seasons for a reason. And that's so, you know, the tree can shed its leaves and it can grow new leaves and make room for new foliage and new fruit in the coming year. Right. So, and hopefully every year the tree's a little bigger and the fruit's a little bit bigger and there's a little more bounty. Right. So it's kind of like, you know, I tell my team that because they'll get, you know, as you're watching your team, they get in cycles too. Right. Like they're struggling with their work. They're struggling being in their role day to day. And it's like, hey, yeah, you know, like it's a, you can pull them aside and say, hey, yeah, it's a cycle that you're stuck in, and don't worry. Like it, you know, it's only a problem if you let it persist. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Try to identify what this is that you're struggling with, and let's get past it. You know what I mean? Like, is it something practical that we can fix? Is it mindset related? Is it, you know what I mean? Like whatever the case may be. So yeah, it sounds like you got a pretty good awareness for it, man. So, I mean, that's like key number one, right?
Yeah. The awareness is definitely step one. And then being willing to fix it or push outside of it. Yeah. It's like, you're exactly right. It's that cycling. And then if you can kick yourself out of the cycle or kick a team member out of the cycle they're in to kind of readjust and realign, it works. Cause it's everything, it in constant and consistent growth, like everything builds up and stops working. And then you have to offload and it builds up and stop working. Like it's just such a weird phenomenon. And I'm finally becoming a lot more aware of it and working hard on doing that and trying to fire myself every day from at least one thing.
Kind of like your job, right? You're just trying to break your own systems. And it's almost like the, you know, the sales and marketing side and the operations and fulfillment side, which are both separate. Marketing and sales are obviously two different things, but they kind of work in unison. And then operations and fulfillment kind of work in unison. There's some overlap too, but like these things are constantly leapfrogging, right? Like, oh, my operations and fulfillment is so good right now. I can comfortably handle, you know, 20 more clients. And then you go and get 40 more clients. And now this is here and this is broken. And you're like, shit. And like, sorry, I don't know if I can swear on here. But like, this thing's up here now. And you're like, okay, I need to stop this and fix this. So then you go back here. And then you realize, before too long, okay, I'm still selling 40 clients, but all I'm overworked in the sales end. I need to hire sales guys. You know, like, so it's like, which is really hard for guys like us. I can't imagine not being the guy who sells for my companies, but I've done it. And when I have, I'm like, man, like we're closing a little bit less, but I can crank the volume up so much higher, you know? So yeah, but anywho, I mean, I know exactly what you're saying there. That's like almost how you have to view it. It's not a linear thing. It's like almost looks like the same as the stock market graph where you build it up, and it breaks, and then you build it up, and it breaks. And like, yeah.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. And you're exactly right. Cause there's my longest time kind of business coach and mentor and friend who has known me since I was like 9 or 10 years old. He always says like operations and sales are always, there's always tension between them. He's always like, operations is sitting around the fire singing Kumbaya, and sales runs through and says, there's a bear coming.
Yeah. You see it at like tech companies, right? Like the guys who like build the software and like, are like, I guess the nerds behind the scenes, right? Like they like hate the sales department. Like the sales department's over there, like with like their fancy outfits and driving Lambos and like, you know, got their like, $5,000 suit on. It's a party. And then the tech guys are like, you know, they're driving on like their hybrid car, and like they're two different, you know, like, but as an entrepreneur, you're the same person in both. You know what I mean? but usually you're more one than the other, right? That's what I try to get like our gym owners to understand, is like most gym owners are operators and fulfillers. They're not sales and marketers. They're right. just generally people that love like fulfilling on their service. So yeah. it's almost impossible. It's almost like sales is a bad word to them.
Right.
Marketing is a bad word. And I'm like, but I'm like, you got to do it. You know what I mean? Like you got to do it and you got to find a way to learn to love it. So like maybe, you know, what I try to do anyways, and I'm sure it's probably similar for a lot of us who teach people how to sell who don't like to sell, is you try to systemize it and make it a process. That way those people who are like those tech loving, nerd loving introverts learn to figure out how to apply process to sales.
Yeah.
You know? So like that's, you know, and that's what we try to do anyways, but it doesn't always go that way, but you hope it does.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I think the more you systematize things, the better it is. Cause yeah, I still catch myself. I'll just drop into something, do it the way I do it. Like I've done it so many times and sometimes I don't know what I did at this point, and I'll hand it to a team member and say, hey, why don't you break down what I did? And then we can talk about it. I can point out what I did. Cause I'm not, there's some things I'm highly aware of. And then when it comes to sales, I'm not highly aware anymore. Sure. Because it's just been, you know, $40-50 million later, wherever I'm at now, I'm kind of farther down the road. It's just like, I could do it. I can do it sleeping almost, but then it's not replicatable. And if you don't have the awareness that it's not replicatable, then you just max to a point where you end up burning out really bad. And it can be, you know, disastrous. And I like what you put in the notes before we were going to get to on chat here. You said, you know, the key to success in business is a combination of self-awareness, pattern recognitions, and knowing the principles of business, mm-hmm. You know, and the disciplines. And like, that's really where it's at, because the startup of a business is fun and it's exciting. And like, you can kind of, it feels like you can do whatever you want and it works, like, comparative to where when you're a little bit farther down the road, but then you really have to nail down, you know, the rest of it. And that's definitely the interesting part, the personal development side of it, I think, is what has kept me engaged almost more than anything else, because there's always another level that I have to solve and figure out and dig deeper to solve something or learn a new skill. And that keeps me perpetually entertained.
Oh yeah. 100%, man. That's my favorite thing to do, is to go into that like self-help personal development, realm. I can almost stay there a little too long sometimes, and I gotta remember to like zoom back out and like do some practical stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's again cycles, right? Like you go in a cycle of self-help, personal development, where it's you're very much in the clouds, you're very much like enlightened, your consciousness is like raised, you know, you you feel like you can control things with your mind, then you gotta like, okay, like now we need to actually bring it back down to earth. And so you kind of go back and forth there too, right? You know, if you stay too like in it, then you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to like go back and forth between them. So that's pretty cool that you've been doing some of that personal development stuff. I have as well. I've gone like super deep down in the rabbit hole of like hermetic wisdom and alchemy, and like even in taking interest in astrology and different types of metaphysical and spiritual. I'm into all of it. Like, you know, like trying to understand like a higher level above, like, why we created these constructs in our society. Like, cause I want to know, have people always been this way? Or right. Is this, you know, like all the stuff we're dealing with right now in the news, like, yeah. You know, when you start digging deep down those rabbit holes, you start to realize like, this is not new. You know what I mean? Like things have been going this way and being disrupted in cycles for millennia. It's human behavior. It's, you know what I mean? You start to understand behavior patterns. You start to realize that like the world's not falling apart. Like this is just part of the same cycles that nature works in, right? Like same ways. So it's like, yeah, man, I'm totally with you on that. What's your favorite stuff that you've been getting into?
Like the last couple of years, I've done it like kind of a lot deeper, like in meditation, because that's just opens up a ton. And then I don't have all the language for this stuff yet because I'm kind of new to it, but I'm doing a lot of like energy work with Reiki healers.
That's cool.
I'm doing a lot of like past life regression is I think what it's called, but I may not have the terminology right, where you go, that's one thing. And then there's another thing that I'm working on where you go back and like restore pieces of your soul, which is super interesting because that's probably the most beneficial. And then I'm doing like a lot more just like self-awareness energy work. I've been following Alex Charfin a lot closer in the last year. And so like really focusing on like what's causing me stress or overwhelm or what's causing me pressure that I need to unload, it brings a higher level of awareness to my body senses. of what's going on. And then that's moved me forward in a big way. Because I think most successful entrepreneurs are super tough mentally and physically in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. I think that gets us through one of the cycles, but then it can become a detriment. Like we've been talking of, I can work really fucking hard, but that's not smart anymore. Like it just doesn't move the needle. But because of that, I've suppressed things that I need to deal with now to go to the next level. And now I realize that all the next levels in my mind are almost all internal work and mindset stuff. And it's just bizarre. And I love the work, but it's the hardest work I've done yet. So
100%. Yeah. I think it is on the other side of that. Like I feel myself like I'm on the verge of that next plane, if you will. I know exactly what you're saying. Like you can kind of feel like you're about to break to that next level where you'll have that next level of vision and whatnot. Yeah, 100%, man. I fully believe in that. Like I myself went through a pretty big, like spiritual, not even spiritual, just full like psychological breakdown and rebuild. Like mm-hmm. It was about the same time I finally, with that second gym, when I finally decided to apply what I knew worked. It was because I was so burnt out that I actually went through like a big, pretty decent crisis. Like I went through like, you know, big mental health issues, you know, I hospitalized myself for fear of myself and people around me. You know, I just driven myself to a place. What you said there that got me thinking about this, I just drew myself to that place where it's like, I almost think like we can be, we wire ourselves to be a little masochistic. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's the right word or not, but like almost like we don't feel pain anymore and we can take on so much, and pain presents itself in different forms, right? There's like the physical pain of like grab this and ow, and it's really acute. But there's also this like very slow working your way into being so far out of your comfort zone, staying there so long, but not ever seeing the results of it, or like, you know, finding it so long that you almost like enjoy it. You enjoy the grind too much, you know, and then you crack, you know what I mean? Like you crack where it's like, and because it happens so slowly, you don't really ever have like the realization that you put yourself there. If you were to take the average person who's just going ho-hum on their day and then put them in your mind, they would like lose it instantly. I never experienced a panic attack. Never experienced like, you know, anything like that before. Never had my world just like shatter around me in a matter of seconds. And that happened to me. You know what I mean? That happened to me. And it like put me on my ass for weeks. I had to like lay in bed. I'm like, what happened to me? Like, I, you know, feel my soul feels empty. Everything's chaotic. I want to run through walls for some reason. Like all the urges, all the, you know, like I said, like really, I was really concerned for my own mental health. I was like and it took me months of deep, deep work to figure out what it was that caused it. And then it wasn't until I like settled down, pulled myself out of that spiraling thought that got me there, that I realized like, oh, it was this. The big things were like, I was putting pressure on myself. I thought because of the success I had in my 20s with that company that I told you guys about, I thought that by the time I was going to be 33 or 34 and I was having my daughter, because that was also something we just found about. So that's a big life changer. I thought that I was going to be Steve friggin' Jobs. Like I thought, you know what I mean? Like I thought by now I should have, you know, $1 billion in the bank. And right. Should have started the next tech company and sold it and gone public. That's legit in my mind what I thought I had done. But no, I was here at this gym with 150 members, struggling to get by. You know what I mean? Like, talk about a fall from grace. You know what I mean? But like, I never stopped for a second to even say that to myself. You know, so it was a few months removed from that I looked back and I'm like, man, you were putting a lot of pressure on yourself. Which, like, woe is me. Like, we should put some pressure on ourselves. We should be hard ourselves to a degree, but like, there's a degree upon which, like, you forget that you were a child once, you were a human once, that's still inside of you. You gotta, like, you know, yeah, you gotta have a balance with that, you know? So, yeah. Sorry to run away with that, but.
No, I'm really glad you shared that because, mm-hmm. I think it was 7 years ago, I had my first massive panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting what you just shared. It's been super helpful for me. And I think for everybody listening too, is because my 20s were like that too. Like I had massive success, massive failure, massive chaos,
yeah,
problems, good. Like it was so up and down. And I was just like, next, I'll take it. Like I just didn't even think about it or process it. And then when my son was born, I I threw away all beliefs, everything I had, and said, I want to really, you know, rebuild something that I want to, when I tell them I believe something, I want to be able to tell them why. I didn't realize, you know, when I was 29 that I didn't know what I believed. So I had dealt with chaos and adversity and success and failure on just such grand levels up to that point. But then, you know, a couple of years after he was born, like I was still in the midst of like figuring all that out. I had my first panic attack, and I really never, I always thought people made that up. Like, to be honest, like,
same thing. That's crazy to say that. I was like, I just thought like pansies, you know, but then when I, yeah, when it happened, when that happened, I was like, holy cow. Like, yeah, it's unreal. And like, I've had some episodes since, but what it did, and like, maybe I'm just curious, like, cause you're sharing your story and this is really cool to talk about, but do you feel like before that you even knew what your own awareness was like? Did you even have awareness? Like you were just probably like me, you're probably just, you thought what you thought was you.
Yeah.
You
know what I
mean? You didn't realize that there's almost like a second
version
person inside that can watch that person make decisions, right?
Yeah.
And once you had the panic attack, you had to now watch yourself. You had to now watch your thoughts, and you had to now say like, okay, like thought, you know, that's not necessarily my thought. That's brought to me by way of my five senses and the things around me, the environment, the stressors, the people, the things I subject myself to. And you're going to get weird thoughts. You know what I mean? Like, and I had to do that because I was having like suicidal ideations, like persistently after that. It was like my brain was stuck in a never ending loop of like the worst kind of dark thought. Right. And which is why I had to hospital myself, is because I was like, I'm not sure if I feel bad, and particularly if I'm going to act on some of this. So I had to gather this ability to watch my own thoughts and realize, try to figure out what's triggering them. Sometimes you don't know what's triggering them because there's more than five senses. There's another, who knows how many that are tuned into going on around you. You know what I mean? And that's when you start getting into that like higher level, you know, energy, like vibration. And like, that, like you're silly if people are silly if they don't think this stuff is real, because, you know, like, I mean, there's physical manifestations of it around us all the time. You know, trees can communicate with each other and grow around each other. Birds all turn left at the same time without saying a word. They say something to each other. It's just not on a frequency we can hear, right? So it's like, we know that, you know, like, and who knows how much bombarding ourselves with all this information is muting that, you know?
Yeah. There's definitely, it's interesting you ask that, because when I was 19, I had such horrible chest pains one time that like I fell on the ground, and of course I just ignored it, and now I know it was stress and anxiety, and like that was the only manifestation that I had. And then early 30s, I think 7 years ago, I had my first panic attack, and it's something else. Like it's hard to describe, but it's like you're getting shocked. For me, it was like electrical shocks, couldn't breathe, crying hysterically, couldn't walk. It was like I was, And I had, in all fairness, I had a few drinks before it happened, but I wasn't drunk. Like I was buzzed, but it was like unreal. And thankfully Rachel was there with me and really sat with me and calmed me and like worked my way through it. And then that was the first time that I recognized all the anxiety I had had for a long time.
Yep.
And then that's when I started to get into meditation and, you know, really leaned into working out more and like actually taking care of my body. And it started the shift. And the last panic attack I had was 2.5 years ago. And it was weird because it was after a 3-week Mediterranean trip with Rachel and my son, and like just probably one of the most amazing experiences I'd had so far in my life. Get off the cruise boat, get onto the bus to take us back to the airport. And I, on the bus, I was just starting to freak out and like really having problems. Like I held it together, but I got off the bus and like, I had to sit down. I was crying and like having to explain to myself, I'm okay. Like, I'm just like, it wasn't a massive one.
Sure.
But it was like I think it was. And like, I don't think I'm going to have many more if I do, but like, I felt like it was actually like the capstone of like, all right, like you got all the way through it. And it was freaking me out that I was able to take 3 weeks off from work and everything was absolutely fine. And now, fortunately, as long as I'm highly aware of when I have anxiety and it's very low and like my days are structured and I've removed a lot of noise, but I always tell anybody that's dealing with any kind of stressful situation, like, man, dig into meditation, like meditation is hard in the beginning. It was for me because sitting quietly for 5 minutes when you haven't worked on your brain in who knows how long is really uncomfortable. It's not calming. It's not peaceful. It just sucks. Yep. Or at least it did for me. And but just in the repetitive habit of doing that now, and I don't do it as much as I'd like to, but I really enjoy when I get to sit down and meditate for 45 minutes or an hour and like just go to other places. And like, it's a totally different thing. But yeah, really coming to grips with my own anxiety, and really then saying, where does this come from? And like, that's where I started to actually acknowledge what happened to me as a kid, being poor and, you know, super similar. And then all the stupid decisions I made that caused immense amount of pain in my 20s, and like working on forgiving myself. It's just, it's a long journey. And I think for me, I got there because I just overworked myself and I pushed too far. Like you said, I now recognize some patterns in the past where like I created pain because I really needed an intense amount of it to feel. It's, you know, it's screwed up, but I get what you're saying. Yeah,
100%. I think it's a, you know, what people call, you know, like a form of masochism in a way, like in how it's probably truly meant. You know, it's not always, you know, it's like you, to a degree, like, have learned to handle the pain, can take it on, and right. Can like live right with it, and it doesn't even feel like pain. Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't even like, that's what was weird to me is I was like, oh, I don't even, you know, none of this feels like pain. But if I zoom out and if I do look at other people and how like they handle stress, like that would probably stress them out, like in a very like physical and manifested way.
Yeah.
But because I've figured out how to process it differently, because, and it probably does have to do with a lot with how, you know, you came up and how you figured out the world.
Yeah.
You're probably exposed to a lot of things people aren't normally exposed to in early life. I know I was. I got all kinds of crazy stories, you know, things I won't share with people I don't know very, very closely, but things that reside here in my brain that, like, you know, you learn to just process in your mind is normal for you.
Right.
So, you know, like, but you're still a human and you still have like some base wiring. So you put, you know, you find ways to process it, you know, it's different, you know. You ever read Relentless, the book by Grover, Michael Jordan's coach?
I started reading that. I think I might have read the whole thing. I don't know if I read the whole thing, but yeah.
But it's kind of, you know, it definitely strike a chord for you if you haven't read it through. As it did for me, but he talks about, like, you know, Kobe and Michael Jordan and all these athletes. And like how they kind of had a similar thing, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like that the dark passenger, if you will, that like,
that's I remember.
So yeah, I think that's something that I'm sure that relates for probably most entrepreneurs, you know, have gone down a similar path, you know.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you just talking openly about that stuff, well, because I think that's the piece. I think there's all these pieces of entrepreneurship that I would agree with you right now. I think it's in a popular phase and it's probably going to continue to be popular for a while. And I absolutely believe in entrepreneurship. I think it's what's going to change the world. And I think that there's unfortunately too many flashy quote unquote entrepreneurs that tell people things that have nothing to do with entrepreneurship or just max out on things that are really a smaller part of it. And this is a real part of the journey. And it means a lot to me that you're willing to share that and just be open, because I know that other people listening would be like, oh, okay, I'm not crazy, or these things do happen. And hopefully, I would strongly encourage everybody listening to really take to heart what we talked about. There's been some warnings here of like, get the right things in place and don't cut corners on your finances, and you know, be conscious of your own mental health, because I do believe that entrepreneurs generally are a lot tougher mentally. But don't push that to where you break. Like, you're not going to help anybody or change the world or do anything useful if you overdo that. So I think this has just been a really transparent and valuable conversation. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, of course. You too, Gabe, man. It's awesome. It's amazing. I mean, I've already known you from past conversations, but it's interesting as you talk with someone a little more, how much more similar I realize we are. That's really, you know, 'cause you almost wonder for yourself too. And I'm sure maybe you're having the same thoughts, is like, how many other people think, process information the way I do, you know? And I don't think it's a lot. So when you meet someone that does, you're like, this is cool. You know what I mean? Like, this is cool that someone else does. And then because us two are openly sharing it, maybe someone else listening will, you know, figure out what they need to sort through these things. I mean, because it really is everything. You know, like you said, you nailed it on the head. Like you went through the panic attack thing, and it is what began the healing. Like I would never wish what I went through upon my worst enemy. Like even if I just really wanted to see someone struggle, I wouldn't make them struggle that bad as I did. Like I really fought some demons after that, and yeah. You know, like I said, it kind of almost uncorked this like spiraling circle of really bad thought. You know what I mean? And like self harm and yeah. Not only how to, you know, like I said, it was crazy. I would never put anybody through that, but like I also would never like take it away from my own journey. You know, and it's even still days now where weird stuff pops in that reminds me that like that's still there. You know what I mean? Like that's still there. But it's also because I have awareness, I realize, oh, like why did that pop up? Okay, what stressors are going on around me? What am I pushing on maybe a little too hard and trying to force here that's causing that warning to go off? You know what I mean? Like, so it's cool, man. And same thing. I hope, you know, I really feel like that's, and I'm sure in some small way it is for you too. I know for in some small way for me, that's what I'm doing for the people that I help. You know what I mean? I'm trying to like liberate them and create freedom and hopefully help them like reach these places that they set out to reach when they started, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the other big lesson is like there are people out there like you if you're an entrepreneur, and I would encourage everybody to find real entrepreneurs like that are willing to talk about their story like you and I do, and like really have built businesses and failed and really gone through it. Don't trust the flashy guys out there that I won't name that I can't stand. but like really find a community of real entrepreneurs who have actually been through it that are maybe 10, 15 years down the road farther than you, because there are plenty of people that understand you as an entrepreneur, but in most cases it's not going to be your family and your friends and your team, and like they're not entrepreneurs, and like it's not fair to expect them to understand you. And I know for me, I've lashed out and hurt a lot of people on those fronts, unfortunately, because I wanted them to get it, like, or get me, or like, I mean, I'm not sure, can't describe it 100%, but I finally learned to really confide in other true entrepreneurs and people that really get it. And that I'm starting to finally understand how to have a community around me, because I think that's the other thing that drives us to panic attacks or bad behavior, you know, where we crash, is because we don't actually have a real community around us there to support us.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's what do they say? Dose. It's like four essential brain chemicals that if they're all like well optimized and balanced, like you're going to pretty much be in a state of happiness. And if one of them's off, you're not going to be in there. I mean, so dose, you know, something practical, breaking this down for the practical people, you know, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins. Dopamine's that reward center, right? We get tons of that as entrepreneurs. Like we don't really need to go out seeking more dopamine releasing things. There's already way too much of it on social media. The big ones are the two middle ones for the most part, you know, is oxytocin and serotonin. You know, the reason why most people are on SSRIs is because of serotonin, you know, like, and how those are triggered. Oxytocin is a chemical of like bonding. Like you need to bond with someone. Like what me and you are doing right now, like I'm the warm, fuzzy feeling I'm getting that you're getting, that like this guy's, this is a shared experience. That's oxytocin. Like me and you are far now less likely. It's like we medicated each other in a way. You know what I mean? And like, and then serotonin is status, right? Like if you flounder for long enough without seeing some increase in your status, whether that be however you measure that for yourself, whether that be, you know,
whatever
status amongst your friends, leadership, physical items, if you really got to have a Lambo to get your status and you don't get it, you know, maybe in that case you need to probably rework what is valuable to you. But you know, for some people that's really what they're stuck on. So whatever, if you don't get that long enough, you're gonna not plug that serotonin receptor into the, or serotonin molecule into that receptor, and you're not gonna get that dose. So now you got to take SSRIs to balance you out. You know what I mean? Like, and I've had to use those before because of what I dealt with. So I know how those can both harm and benefit you. But anyways, you don't need them if you can find these things. And like you said, that's like, if you know it from that perspective, you know, it just reaffirms what you just said. And that's like, you need a community. You need to be around like-minded people that can openly share these things, because the journey as an entrepreneur is not one of just a bunch of tools and practical advice. No. That's like, that's the lowest value stuff. And that stuff's going to change tomorrow. It's knowing, like you said, you'd repeated back what I put in my application of like, it's the knowing the principles, and it's knowing the disciplines. You know what I mean? If you know those things, now you have vision. and then you have vision, and now you can see, okay, what tool is out there on the market now that can help me execute this vision quicker, and then tools become valuable. But, you know, no matter who's peddling what software, none of it's going to solve your problem if you go straight to it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, if it was software, we could just buy enough and we'd make billions.
Yeah. And there's like a brief window when some new software might actually be like, you know, the panacea for like whatever you're dealing with. But then pretty quickly, if it's that good, your competitors will all know about it. It's a temporary thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting. Like, obviously ClickFunnels is something we're all really, really familiar with. I got a Two Comma Club award over my shoulder. You know, I've been through Russell's programs. I've done everything but his inner circle because it was full when I went through it. But I was in his, the Two Comma Club coaching program last year, paid $30,000 to be in it. Soon as you get in there, Russell starts opening up a little bit. And don't get me wrong, he wants to sell the crap about out of ClickFunnels. It's what he does. But you start getting into some law of attraction level stuff. You start getting into these conversations like we're talking now. You start talking about rewiring, you start talking about human behavior, behavioral patterns. You start getting, it's like, you know, you start getting to NLP and how to use it on yourself and others, you know, like, it's like pretty quickly you realize like, okay, like, you know, Russell's obviously got a business to run. He's got to sell ClickFunnels and he's got partners he's got to make happy. Right. And he's an amazing, amazing person. Like, he's very genuine and you know, all that stuff. But, you know, when you get on the inside, you start to really see why he's successful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Great insight. And we'll definitely have you back on the show, Will, because this has been a blast. And I knew we were 100% aligned, but it's been fun to explore it and do that more. So
yeah,
everybody can check out biglittlegyms.com, work with Will, especially obviously if you're looking for help on the you know, gym development and growth front. And honestly, I think on all entrepreneurial fronts, I'd you know, highly recommend that people connect with you, Will. And super appreciate you being on today, man. This has been an absolute blast.
Yeah, likewise, Gabe. I was incredibly honored just to, you know, that you reached out and had asked, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and I try, you know, there's always people reaching out trying to get you on their shows because they want to leverage your community or whatever. I didn't think for a second that was the case with this. And I didn't hesitate for a second to schedule a time to jump on with you. Whereas with a lot of these other guys, where I know that that's their angle, I don't take the time because obviously with limited time, we got to be working, right? So, but I figured this is, I mean, and now I know this was 100% worth the time spent because, and then likewise, you gave me a lot of credit there and told people, you know, anybody who's watching that's considering working with you should, man, because these are the kinds of conversations you can have with someone like Gabe. And, you know, like, that's incredibly valuable. That's what's going to help you unlock the next level, you know?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Will, and we will definitely have you back soon and get an update on where you're progressing with everything in the business. So thank you so much.
Awesome, brother. Thank you, Gabe.
This show is brought to you by Today's Business Leaders. Learn more at our website, todaysbusinessleaders.com. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify today.